I cannot tell you how absolutely delighted I am to be back in the warmth of this parish community and the richness of worshiping with you. I know that I should thank Jeffrey and the other clergy for giving me this great opportunity, but then I read the gospel for this morning and I realized they would do anything to get out of preaching on that gospel. You know, even reaching into ancient history and, you know, dusting me off and wheeling me out. So it's a, but it is a delight. I am delighted and grateful, gentlemen and ladies, to be back at this place. And I'm still responsible for making some sense out of that parable of what's called the dishonest steward. Now, the story is of a cretinous little clerk whose extravagances are discovered and whose day of reckoning is set. Before facing his employer for what is certainly to be the last time, he cooks the books in favor of his clients, whose moral vision is as murky as his own. And the employer, instead of being outraged by this kind of behavior, congratulates him for his cleverness, and we don't know, but presumably keeps him on. Everything in that story is counter to everything that Jesus ever taught. Until you come to the words stuck at the end of that parable. For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. In other words, this is not how we're supposed to behave. And what that means is that Jesus expects us to be able to learn from bad examples as well as from the good ones. That we are expected to be able to learn from these moral pygmies gathered around in this parable as we are from the ethical giants like the Good Samaritan and the Good Shepherd. Learning from a bad example requires a particular kind of skill. And I'd like to talk with you about that in light of this parable this morning. Now, bad examples, there are so few here in Washington that you may have to stretch a little bit. Bad examples in the Bible or in the news, in family lore, in neighborhood gossip, all of them present us with a tempting moral trap. And the trap is to see ourselves as spectators. People who can give a rowdy thumbs up or thumbs down to the behavior of others. And we can do that while we're safe in the bleachers and they are scrabbling about in the arena. And we thank God that we are not like them, the Epsteins, the Weinsteins, the Cosbys of this world, the parents who buy college admission for their children, the looters, shooters, and polluters of this life. We're not like that. And we think that we can enjoy their humiliation or lament their escape, all from the safety of the moral high ground, the bleachers. That's a trap. It's a trap because life is not a spectator sport. We are all in the arena. We are all linked together whether we like it or not, and neither piety nor denial can unlink us. We are separated from this people in this story by degrees, not absolutes. The moral high ground is simply an extension of the ethical valley. There is only one human topography, and it includes us all. Now, that's unpleasant. Nobody likes to think about that. So, like reasonable people, we try not to think about it. And one of the things that we do here in church every time we gather is that in just a few minutes, we are going to take head-bobbing, chin-rubbing pride in joining together with life's victims, life's hardships, and we do that in our intercessory prayers, standing arm in arm together with them before God, pleading for grace. But then nobody wants to admit that just after those prayers in the confession, we are bound to all the perpetrators of those hardships, standing arm in arm with them before God, pleading for mercy and forgiveness. The we of we confess is the same size as the hour of our Father. The arena has no bleachers. The arena has no bleachers. The dishonest steward and his ilk are not them, they are us. And ours is not to judge them, but to learn from them. And that's what Jesus is asking us to do in this parable. So how can we learn from this particular bad example? Well, the first is to notice a very subtle shift in the focus of the story. It begins with an interaction between two people, the owner and the manager. But then it very quickly shifts to be focused on just one. It moves from us to me. Us to me. The clerk uses 8 personal pronouns in just a few sentences in the center of that prayer. You've got to be impressed with the amount of research that goes into these things, by the way. That subtle shift from us to me might appear trivial, but it is in fact a major aspect of human sin. That little shift from us to me can destroy a marriage. That little shift from us to me can allow the grossest kind of irresponsibility with the environment, with the economy, the political landscape, or almost any place else that you would go. If we come to this parable as learners rather than judges, then let us learn and be aware of that subtle, vital, often fatal step from us to me. And there's a second lesson there. It is in the double down tactic of the clerk. Now, it was dishonesty that got him into trouble in the first place. So he has cleverly decided that a little more dishonesty will get him out. Now, from the bleachers of life, you can see how foolish that is. But as we all know, in the arena, it has its appeal. When the immediate perils of truth begin to outweigh the inevitable costs of falsehood, that kind of foolishness can seem to make sense. Just one little fib to cover up the last one. Just one dessert before the diet starts tomorrow. What I do about right-wing anger is left-wing anger. We really hate bigots. We have a communication problem, but I don't want to talk about it. The children are feeling neglected. Is there an app for that? That cretinous little clerk who seems so different from us is actually sitting among us, giving us an opportunity to reflect, to learn, to grow. There's one other thing to consider. Jesus has given us a parable based on what he calls this generation. Now, by that, he means the way a human-centered world does its business. And it is contrasted with the God-centered children of light. Now, you will not be surprised that the textbook answer in this place is that when it comes to identity is, we're the children of light. That's us. You know, that's us. We're the children of light. But speaking personally, I have to admit, I'm doing pretty well in this human-centered world. And unless the demographics of St. Albans Parish have changed a great deal since I left, most of you are doing pretty well in it too. Now, I don't think that's wrong or bad. On the face of it, we are, I believe, to be stewards, responsible managers of our well-being, not guilt-ridden deniers of it. But the fact remains that most of us in this place walk with some confidence in this generation. So, wonder with me for a moment. If Jesus told a parable about my life, or about your life, or about our life together, what would be the point? Would he be, in fact, teaching people about the subtle danger of letting things shift from us to me, from the corporate to the individual? Would it be about the foolishness of doubling down and trying to lie our way out of deceit or fake our way into integrity? Or would there be some other point that our stories would provide? If Jesus told the story of our particular accommodations to this generation, I would hope and pray that his listeners would not judge us or pity us, but would seek to learn from us so that we all might move closer to the light. I think that's what Jesus is asking us to do about this parable in today's gospel. Amen.